Welcome to the 62nd edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded on the Monday evening immediately after Arsenal's 1-1 FA Cup home draw with Leeds United, 2 days before the team travelled to Ipswich Town for the first leg of the Carling Cup semi-final. This podcast is sponsored by the website for all your most stylish Arsenal t-shirts, GoonerShirts.com. I'm your host, David Udoh, and we have established a little consistency in our panel selection by retaining two of our last recording sessions trio. First up, the man who, after the Spurs defeat, emailed us to state that Arsene Wenger could go and do one. It's Mr. Mark Ollington.
Hello.
Secondly, editor of the Gooner, hoping to update his book, Arsenal, The Making of a Modern Superclub, available from Vision Sports Publishing now, I believe. But anyway, with a fresh chapter explaining how the team pulled off a miraculous title win in just a few months' time, it's Mr. Kevin Witcher.
Good evening, listeners.
And last, but by no means least, the return of an old friend. In our attempts to take rotation policy to its ultimate extreme, a former host of this here podcast is trying his hand at being one of the panel. As he's been marooned in Japan for more time than we care to remember, it'll be interesting to hear if he's taken all matters Arsenal. And if not, then he'll soon be on the other side of the microphone. It's welcome back and konnichiwa to konnichiwa. Mr. Joe Broadfoot.
Konnichiwa, everyone. I can't say everyone in Japanese.
So guys.
It's his sound, isn't it?
Here he comes, Rio Miyachi, to live and breathe. So, to sort of give us some context, since our last recording, you know, when Mark called for the head of our manager as soon as possible, the team has played Partizan Belgrade, an uninspiring victory, Manchester United, a less inspiring defeat, and then we beat Chelsea, and then we drew with Wigan, then we beat Birmingham, then we somehow conspired to draw with Leeds and Manchester City. Mark, last time the glass was very, very much half empty. Have you topped up over Christmas?
It's slightly increased. The gas tank has got a bit more fuel inside it, David, and I'm chugging down the motorway at 60 miles an hour. But I'm not speeding, I'm not in the fast lane, I'm very much on the inside still. Because whilst it is looking better, whilst, you know, we had that miraculous, fantastic and inspiring win against Chelsea, the fact of the matter remains we shoot ourselves in the foot still. Wigan, 2-2, it shouldn't be happening. Man City, who put the proverbial 10 men behind the ball, but how many chances did we carve? A barrage, could we score? No. And Leeds, how we failed to beat that team, nay, we almost got beaten, is beyond me. So whilst there's been inspiring moments, whilst I've been happy at times, still I'm not at full mast.
Well, I don't think that was quite the question I asked, Mark, but thank you for the insight. I hope you got some pipe cleaners for Christmas. Kev, you're reading your editorials on onlinegooner.com and in the last two issues of the Gooner, dare I say that there's an air of optimism coming out of you, probably inspired by your sojourn to the Canaries over the new year. I mean, how do you think, since the most awful capitulation I've seen by an Arsenal team in living memory against Spurs, I mean, we seem to have picked things up, but where are you at the moment?
Well, I'm living in hope, David, because it is possible. You know, I know, having seen the game against Chelsea and having seen the performance against Birmingham, that the players, when Arsene picks his strongest 11, have enough in them to win this title. You know, there is the actual basic ability there to be the best team in this country. Partially because, you know, we're all, you know, honest about this, the main rivals are having tough seasons. I mean, everyone has said United, despite the fact that they could actually match our unbeaten season, are getting away with a lot of results. You know, they're playing pretty average football and still racking up the points. So that, in a sense, are they going to suddenly improve? You know, I suspect, or I hope, anyway, I'm an optimistic hat, I'm hoping they won't. I'm hoping that actually reality will dawn and they will start dropping more points that they actually deserve to. And it is a title that is there for the taking. Now, you know, I've got to put a caveat here. In 2008 and 2010, there were periods when I thought Arsenal could win this title and should win this title, and they blew it. Now, we've all been burnt before, but, you know, it's like a goddamn relationship. You move on to the next one, you're always living in hope. So, on that level, once again, I'm prepared to be a sucker and think it could actually be our season. Even if it's only because the other teams are so bad, who cares? You know, bottom line is, history will record who won the title. They won't be saying it's because the other teams are crap. They would just be saying the best team that year was. Now, it could be Arsenal if, number one, they can get the best players on the field for most of the games, and number two, mentally, they can carry it through. The real only significant change that needs to happen is that the defence does need to tighten up. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, but I'm sure we'll get on to that.
Kev, mirroring the Jeremy Kyle housewife there, why do you study with him, Penny?
Because I love him, Jeremy.
Because I love him. Joe, when did you actually set foot back in Blighty, and what games have you seen since then?
I've seen pretty much all the games since I came back. I got back about December the 15th, and I've actually caught up, because I signed on to Arsenal Online, and I caught up on all the footage I missed. I didn't miss that much because I was checking out the goals as best I could online from Japan. But, yeah, I try and keep up to date with stuff. And quite honestly, my criticism of the team is what it's always been. Where is the goalkeeper? What can you win without a proper goalkeeper? Fabianski has had a couple of good games from what I can gather, but not much more than that. That doesn't make him a great goalkeeper. He still makes mistakes, and he still looks tiny. He must be, what, 6'3", 6'4"? But I was behind the goal for the Chelsea game. He looked minute compared to Peter Cech. He looked minute, and he's got no presence. And I'm sorry, people get angry with me about this, but Fabianski, from the moment I first saw him playing goal, it was against Barnet in a pre-season friendly game, he was awful. He's one of the worst goalkeepers I've ever seen at the club. And I can't accept him as a number one. Even Almunia, and I know how much you hate him, Dave, even Almunia is just a step up from Fabianski.
Leave Galatasaray's number one alone.
Yeah, well, we'd like to see him go to Galatasaray or anywhere but Arsenal. But it's not acceptable. I think Arsene Wenger seems to be carrying out some bizarre experiment to win the league with a rubbish goalkeeper. Because, quite honestly, I've never known a team to win the league with a poor goalkeeper, as poor as what we've got at Arsenal. You know, apart from the youngster, you know, the, was it Wojciech?
Wojciech Szczesny.
I can't say it as well as you, Dave, but he is a class keeper, so why doesn't he play him? I don't understand how he can retain his patience watching Fabianski in goal, who's, as I said, from my view, he's only had a couple of good games in his whole Arsenal career so far. And Almunia, obviously, he's not going to play again for Arsenal. That's the way it seems. And he's getting these mysterious injuries. I just don't understand why Arsene Wenger doesn't address this problem. It's a fundamental problem, and it's so easy to solve. And then there was all this stuff over the summer which drove me nuts with Schwarzer. He was going to come in. And then what happened? We even came out and declared that we were interested in this goalkeeper, and then we didn't get him. So is Fulham suddenly a bigger club than Arsenal? I mean, these sort of things have been driving me nuts all summer, so I'm sorry it's all coming out in a rush now.
Obviously, over the last 3 months, Manuel Almunia has lost his place in the team, and I think we all accept now that Łukasz Fabianski is now our first choice goalkeeper. I mean, Mark, what do you make of the goalkeeping situation? I mean, there seems to be less of a clamour around the Gooner fan base over the last couple of months for a new keeper.
I'm afraid I can't be as harsh as Joe. And whilst I don't think Fabianski will ever be a world-class keeper, I do actually think now he's got a run of games, he's become a decent Premiership keeper, and probably more decent than our Spanish incompetent actually was. And having said that, the times you have seen Szczesny, he has looked the part. But don't forget, he's still young. And I think at the moment, Fabianski number one, Szczesny number two, I'm happy with that. And I do think Fabianski is good enough to win the league with. When I look at the keepers, and let's go back to Kev's points of other teams not being as good this year, Peter Cech aside, who's not the keeper he perhaps once was, Van der Sar makes a lot of mistakes for Man United now. I think Joe Hart's probably the best keeper out of the top four or five clubs. But I don't think Fabianski's that far off Van der Sar, and I think actually he's not going to be the one that's going to stop us winning the M-League. If anything, it's our central defence, because we've only got two fit players at the moment. But I'm quite happy with the goalkeeping situation, and I've got no doubt that Szczesny will be our keeper for years and years to come. The guy's bonkers. He's a mentalist. I really like him.
Can I just interject here? I wanted to say that a lot of people were saying the central defence is the problem. But if you're playing in front of a goalkeeper you don't trust, as a central defender, you're not going to play your best. So I think the problem lies in the goalkeeping position, which everyone pretty much identified. And suddenly, Arsene Wenger, because he keeps picking this guy, we've got used to his foibles, if you like. We've got used to the fact he's going to drop the ball.
That's
sometimes
a bit harsh, Joe. I can't think of a bad game he's had in the last 10 games. He's been pretty flawless.
He's been
When he came into the team, a friend of mine remarked that what Fabianski doesn't need five brilliant games. He needs 20 very, very ordinary games. And that's it. I mean, the nature of a good goalkeeper is the same as a good referee. You don't notice they're there. Kev, I mean, Kev are a distinguished editor and provider of Chinese delicacies here on a Monday evening in the whatever community centre we're in. And I are now neighbours at Ashburton Grove owing to a family issue in the Udo household. And we haven't seen much great football since we started sitting together, in fairness. But I don't think at any point we've been particularly harsh on the goalkeeper, have we, Kev?
No, because as a rule, he hasn't made huge headers. He did. He could have stopped the set piece goal Chelsea scored, but we don't really focus on that because we won the game. I think the worst calamity very recently was the second Wigan goal, where he went walkabout, was caught in the middle of nowhere, leading to the Scalacci own goal. So, you know, there is certainly an argument that a better keeper would have got us a couple more points here or there. But generally, you know, the dropped points aren't a result of his errors, as was the case against Newcastle and with Almunia in goal against West Brom. So a run of games has helped the guy. It's obviously what he needed. He's not top class. If you really want to make the team as good as it possibly can be and you've got the money, then you buy better. Whether or not the club have got money is obviously a point of debate. But I think most supporters now are looking at central defence as the area where we probably need strengthening. And some of them are looking a little bit further forward and just saying, well, in midfield, is Alex Song enough in terms of stopping the opposition? What happens if Song gets injured? So, you know, there are weaknesses in the team which they could get away with. If everyone stays fit, specifically Giroud, in the unlikely event Vermaelen comes back, the picture gets a lot rosier. But even Giroud and Koscielny can work, much as I don't rate Koscielny as a central defender because of his lack of ability in the air and lack of physical strength in the challenge. We could just about get away with it if the forwards are on fire and the goals are going in. So, you know, it's a bit of a tightrope walk, but I don't single out Fabianski as the weakest link, if you like. I think it's actually more of a team thing now. It's about the whole team gelling in terms of attitude, commitment, partially, as we'll get onto, I'm sure, the reason Arshavin has been dropped. You know, you can do great things if you've got team spirit. And if that can develop with a series of results over the next few weeks, then the team are in a great position to challenge and could actually do something. You know, they've been in that position before. They haven't done it. But, you know, a couple of years down the line, maybe they've learned something. Time will tell.
Plenty of things to pick up there on from Ken's comments. I was going to leave it until a little bit later in this issue of the podcast, but I mean, the nature of football is we all love a bit of speculation. We spend most of September through to the end of the calendar year waiting for the transfer window, and now that we're here with Sebastian Scalacci set to be out for a few weeks, which of course in Arsenal medical parlance means forever. And Thomas Vermaelen's heel or septum injury showing no signs of ever clearing up, and it looks as though we're set to dig into the transfer market. So, should we really be looking for a defender who couldn't hack it at Villa or Sheffield United and who's valued by Bolton at £20 million? A German who's Champions League cup tied, Sol Bloody Campbell.
Hey, Sol, man!
You're bringing Sol back.
If he comes back again, does he get the match ball? You know, or should we be casting our net a little wider? Joe, we obviously need to buy a centre half, and it looks as though the manager will dip into the £60+ million he's got burning a hole in his skyrocket. Who would you like to see come in as in the centre defence? You looking for a first choice or someone to come in and tide things over until TV5's back?
As strange as it may sound, I wouldn't be against Sol Campbell coming back.
Can we get Steve Ashford next time? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Oh, no, go on.
No, because there's no centre-backs out there that I particularly want Arsenal to sign. There's
Hang
no
on a minute, what about Mertesacker?
Yeah, but we're not going to sign Mertesacker.
Why not?
Because realistically, do you think Arsene Wenger's going to spend the necessary amount of money to bring him in?
Well, this comes down to questions of ambition, and I think a signing of that sort would be the equivalent of signing Arshavin 2 years ago.
Yeah, I do agree. Of
making
course,
a statement,
a major signing.
Which is, you know, that on occasion we need to actually buy someone who's established and proven quality who will improve the team, which is exactly what Arshavin did initially, and. I mean, that was a terrible season and we would already lost the league by the time he signed. He was signed for other reasons. However, what happens is in this January window could determine what does happen in the title race for Arsenal. And the one thing I think would boost the team is an experienced defender who has been there and bought the T-shirt. Now, whether or not you think that should be Gary Cahill because he's played in the Premier League, or Mertesacker obviously hasn't, but then again, he's played at such a high level, you'd have thought he could cope with what he's going to get from other teams visiting Arsenal. For me, Mertesacker is the obvious choice. You know, go for him. He's more or less available, as far as I understand. It's just
so why do we wait till the end of the transfer deadline to make our move?
That's because
negotiating. You're like trying to get the best possible price. We almost didn't get Arshavin because of that.
I think it'd be different this season, though. I think if it's Scarhew isn't going to come back for 8 weeks, and Vermaelen isn't, you know, he can't come back, then we're going to know with so many games in January. Surely we can't cope with two centre-halves and we can't play Song there short, that many games. So he's got to move quickly.
I agree completely. I mean, who do you want? I mean, it seems to me that although Mertesacker's the logical choice, this could be where Wenger does a Jeffers and spuffs £16 million on Phil Jagielka.
Do you know what?
Well, you know, he could play in goal, actually. I've seen Jagielka in goal and he's far better than Fabian.
That's the goalkeeping crisis sorted.
The thing with Sol Campbell is, Joe, he can't get in Newcastle's team.
I know he's only played six games, but that's not the point.
It kind of is the point.
Is he fresh? Has any
but he fits into the Arsenal
ever signed three times for Arsenal?
No.
Somehow.
No, I don't think anyone's...
But Luke,
nobody's twice. Sold on that so, idea, I know that.
Sol Campbell.
He'd be the first player to sign three times.
But you must admit, he did much better in his last spell at Arsenal than most people expected. Because at the time, I said, I think he'll do all right.
Let's just clarify one thing. He started three Premier League games for Newcastle. Why is he not starting games?
It can't be because Mike Williamson and Fabrizio Colaccini are the new Adams and O'Leary, that's for sure.
But it could be because he was critical of the owner. Because when he got rid of Houghton,
he had many games he could have been picked for under Chris Houghton. Houghton was there until
that's true.
He didn't even play against Stevenage in the cup on Saturday, which is traditionally a game where you'd play the women's team if you could. I mean, obviously that turned out as well as it did for Newcastle. But
so where did this rumour come from that he's going to?
It was lazy journalism putting two and two together and getting 26. Yeah, I think
it's not reality. I don't think it's lazy.
Is there anyone in our reserves or U team centre halves that are meant to be up and coming?
Ignacy Mikkel.
I've heard of it. Some dude was on the bench on Saturday.
Howie Nordvik's been sold to Borussia Mönchengladbach. It was a useful use of £1.5 million for a club so parsimonious as us.
We lost money on that deal, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so. Ignacy Mikkel's captain of the reserves. He was on the bench on Saturday. I've never so much as seen him. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
I could think I might go for him.
He is quite highly rated, actually. I mean, he's the captain of the... it's the youth team, I think, he's the captain of. But then the youths are the reserves, aren't they?
Yeah.
But then again, if he was that good, we would have seen him already in the Carling Cup. So he's obviously not ready. I mean, that's one thing about football today which I kind of don't like so much. Because, you know, when I was first going regularly in the 80s, you did actually used to see... youth team players get a little shout. You know, it wasn't like this big squad of players which never let a youngster through.
Yeah.
The real squad was about 16 or 17 players. So you didn't have a player for every position. And sometimes you'd get a Mickey Thomas suddenly pop up. You know, you get a player coming in and you've never heard of. He played two or three games. You thought, we've got a player here.
Or even like a Neil Heaney.
Now, the last time I remember it happened was someone like... yeah, all right.
Sorry. But no,
do you remember
that,
Kerrier Gilbert, was it?
Yeah, the
one back in 2006. Yeah. He looked useful, then got injured.
But you know? It also, going back to your point, like, even back in the 90s, you had players like, you know, your Heaneys, as I just mentioned, or your Hilliers, or your Campbells.
Well, Ian
sometimes they worked, Ian other times Selling. They didn't work. But it was fun, though, wasn't it, watching them come through?
It was good.
And get
it was
results.
Good because you felt like
these. Well, Kevin Campbell was the big one, wasn't he? In the early in the early 90s, you know, this guy couldn't stop scoring for the reserves. Let's see him. But in this world of saturation media coverage of football, you know about 14-year-olds.
But to a lesser extent, Hillier, I mean, even though his career tailed off and he had a lot of problems, that latter half of the season when he won the championship in 91, he came into the team, steadied the ship, and looked like a really great young prospect.
Yeah. And then he kept stealing people's baggage at Heathrow Airport.
It had a sad ending to the story, but for a while, it was exciting, wasn't it, when old Hillier burst off.
Oh, God, absolutely. I mean,
nowhere.
I think the last one was that sort of comes to memory.
Mark Flats.
Mark apparently slept with his eyes open. Mark Flats used to sleep with his eyes wide open.
Oh, go away.
No, seriously, I can't remember who his roommate was, but someone mentioned he sleeps with his eyes wide open. He's terrifying.
Yeah.
I remember, do you remember Graham Barrett, the Irish centre forward?
Yeah, the one that did the rape.
Yeah, Big
E. No, was he the rape?
No, that's Reese Murphy.
Murphy,
Graham Barrett was a keeper that did the rape.
Graham Stack, who was accused and subsequently acquitted of a serious sexual assault.
For our legal department.
Anyway, the other rumour that I think it's a question of when rather than if is Manuel Almunia likely to depart.
Sorry, Dave, set the back for your one, that German dude, yeah?
Yeah. Arsenal, if you're listening, Per Mertesacker, £11 million. I mean, look, Wolfsburg are in the bottom half of the Bundesliga. Zeko's left. It's a bit of, you know, Tim Wiese, the goalkeeper's likely to leave and go to Bayern Munich. It's a bit...
How old is he, this player?
Something 27, 50 caps.
And what's he, like 11 grand? Or 11, grand
11 million,
million
pound, apparently, yeah.
That's right, isn't it?
I'd take him.
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
done.
Me too.
Done.
Enzo
fucking hell. So it looks as though Manuel Almunia is on his way to Galatasaray or Real Malaga. But so, something else that kind of concerned me was Vito Minone's loan to Hull's been extended to the end of the season, leaving us with just Fabianski and Chesney. And as Wenger showed on Saturday and in the Carling Cup ties, and even when Fabianski was injured at Old Trafford, had to sit on the bench, it's clear that he has no faith in Damian Martinez, James Shea or Sean McDermott, our three younger goalkeepers. So do we expect Wenger to bring in a safety keeper like he did with Guillaume Vermoots back in 2004? Do you remember him?
No.
Yes,
French goalkeeper came and sat on the bench for about eight games.
No, I remember Rami Shaban.
Mark Poon.
That was, do we expect Wenger to bring in a sort of 36, 37-year-old goalkeeper to tie things over, Kev?
I think he will try and wing it with two keepers.
Crazy.
Even with Flavio Roma available on a free transfer from AC Milan.
The chances of two keepers both getting injured are slim. So he will take the gamble.
What, one's inept and the other one famously broke both his arms trying to do too many weights at London Colney.
He wasn't tweeting much after that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Twatter rather than Twitter, I think, in that respect.
So, no, I do not expect a keeper to be signed before the summer, although in the summer I would either like Chesney to be promoted or... For him to actually improve the position by buying someone decent.
There's a question about Chesney.
Of course you can.
What do you think of his pink kit?
I think it's brilliant, and I'll tell you why. Because
it's the Peter Cech theory.
It is basically, it makes him look bigger in the goal. And
what, wearing pink?
Yes. Schmeichel used to wear bright colours, I think, from memory. Subconsciously, the presence of this huge blob of colour in the goal to opposition strikers does actually make them think the keeper is bigger. Yeah. Now, short of wearing giant comedy clown gloves, there is no other way of achieving that effect. And I think it works. You know, I think it makes him more imposing, more frightening, more of a presence. So that if you're going up for a corner and the corner of your eye, there's this shock of pink is coming at you. You're going to think twice before you get the header in. And by that time, he's cleared the ball away with his fist.
All I'm taking from that is Kev wants us to sign Gok Wild in goal.
Yeah. But isn't it Mr. Steve Ashford also has his theory that the reason why Cech is also so good is that thing he wears on his head gives him an extra 2 inches in like height.
Bollocks. That's classic Ashford wind-up, I'm afraid.
Steve's been trying to convince me about his extra 2 inches for longer than I can't remember. Coming to you now, Joe, the other rumour that's sort of circulating that is one of those very, very, very spurious things that surely can't be true because it's too fanciful. It's reports that Wolfsburg want to use £11 million of their Edin Dzeko money, or, you know, let's hope their Per Mertesacker money, to buy Danielsson, or that, even more fanciful, that he could be the subject of a transfer tug of war between no less than Barcelona if they can't get Cesc Fabregas in the summer. Would you let our Brazilian midfield talisman, the man I once described as Brazilian only in the sense that he's a cunt with neatly trimmed hair, go so cheaply, or would you want to retain his services?
When you said cheaply, did you say £11 million?
£11 million.
Wow, I will take it, because you're never going to get.
You're joking.
You're never going to get a bid of £11 million for somebody like Danielsson. I mean, Danielsson's worth £5 million maximum.
He's the fulcrum of our team.
Did we pay seven? Was it 7 million?
I think it was
three and a half.
Oh, well, then we make a decent profit. If we sell him for five, I'll be really happy with that. Although I must say, he did put in a reasonable shift in the last game, apart from giving away a penalty.
Oh yeah, it was shocking.
A blot on the
it's landscape. Slightly disconcerting if you're a Premier League footballer and you can't defend against Leeds. Pleased me was I did put myself through it again and watched the highlights on ITV1 on Sunday morning, and it did make me laugh when Clive Tilsley said despite Arsenal making 9 changes to their first team, they are still able to field 10 full internationals.
Except
and Danielsson.
On that note, it was interesting to read in the Barcelona interest story that their perception of Danielsson is that he doesn't give the ball away. Now, I mean,
Kev, don't say anything, they might be listening. Señor Laporta, es muy buen jugador, sí.
I mean, okay, occasionally, you know, he makes 2 and 3 yard passes and the ball does reach an opponent, but statistically, I'm not completely convinced he's quite that complete. And I mean, I think a lot of these stories are, as David has mentioned, lazy journalism. And the idea of Danielsson signing for Barcelona, it's difficult to really get your head around that one.
You'd be lucky to get into the Bolton team, quite honestly.
It would be brilliant if he does sign for Barcelona and comes his world great.
That'd be brilliant, Mark. That'd be fan-fucking-tastic, yeah.
Just like your theory about Nicholas Bender going to win the World Player of the Year in a couple of years.
Nicholas Bender.
There's more chance of that happening with Danielsson, I reckon.
Bender is going to win the World Football Review.
But he said by the time he's 30.
And you know, strikers take a long time to develop.
But did you see when Chesney, which was going back to our keeper, absolutely bawled at Danielsson? It was fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I love.
He gave him a right rollicking.
About
it was superb.
That keeper. He will actually give it verbally in the way that the great keepers will.
Did you notice Fabregas even came out on the post-match interview and he was slagging off Danielsson without mentioning his name? He said we shouldn't be giving away penalties like that. Well, clearly he was talking about Danielsson.
I can't help but think that with the Chesney over Fabianski situation is that Wenger's quite aware of the fact that he's got the new Iker Casillas. But we on this podcast have shown that we're very harsh, mean bastards. And whilst we've all got great hopes for this guy, all it needs is one Tim Flowers over the shoulder or one Massimo Taibbi through the legs and something will be, should have spent the fucking money on Rainer. Wenger at you, bastard. You know, I mean, maybe he's looking to protect him from the likes of us.
I think we're giving more of a chance, though. I think we know what he's capable of. He earned his stripes at Brentford. We've seen him play 4 first-team games now, and a bit of bad kick in the side hasn't let us down yet. So if he does have a bad game, he's almost due a bad game being so young, and I reckon he'll probably get the benefit of the doubt. Problem Fabianski had was he was shit from the very start. So when your first and second and third games are a bit shit, then you're like a lost to nothing. Whereas Chesney has almost proved that he's ready and ready to go. I think he's due a bad game.
I think, in all fairness, his attitude is what has convinced people. Yeah. Now, he has been making mistakes. Hmm. He does often pass the ball to the opposition in our half and open the team up to the chance of just being lobbed straight back over his head. He's got away with it, but people are aware he's making mistakes. But because he will compete and shows that he really cares, people are prepared to not get on his back and forgive him. The difference with Fabianski is he will not clatter into a huge group of players so determined to get the ball, whereas Fabianski will go in, which is what you want from a keeper who's going to dominate his area.
Yeah, Fabianski, he just can't dominate the 6-yard box at all. I mean, the ball's going over his head and he's doing. He's kind of dancing on the spot.
He is not owning his territory. Szczęsny owns that area. Mm. And woe betide you if, A, you're on his team and you don't do the right thing, or B, you're an opposition player trying to get the ball, because he will be coming out to get it. And that's what we want.
It's natural human reaction. I don't care if you play on Hackney Marshes or whether you play at Wembley Stadium. If a cross comes in and you're a centre-forward and you hear, "Gamers!"
Yeah.
You get out of the fucking way. And Chesney's more likely to do Fabianski, who goes, "Oh, I quite like it, but I look a bit like a Polish orphan."
So here's a question then, even though you're the kind of host, David. Why is it that we love Chesney and his confidence and the fact that he believes he's Mr. Barry Bollocks, yet Barry Bender does it and we think he's the right tosser?
Because he backs it up with what he's supposed to do, which is basically does his job.
I tell you what, I'd love it if Wenger plays Chesney on the right wing for the next 6 months. Yeah. Shame on you all. Barry Bender's my hero. So, we're talking about ups and downs. And, Wojciech Chesney made his Premier League debut in the Manchester United game. In fact, I think it's fair to say that he and maybe Jack Wilshere are probably the only two highlights of that particular game. Joe, what made such a difference between the performances against Manchester United, which I think was probably your first game back in the country, and Chelsea, where we went from absolutely abject, looking about as penetrative, as a completely impenetrable, impenetrating thing, and Chelsea, where we turned into Brazil circa 1970?
Well, looking at the team sheet before the Chelsea game, I have to say I was very worried. I couldn't see how we could win it. I just couldn't. And then when I watched the way we were passing the ball and not really making a lot of chances early on, I just thought, well, it's typical Arsenal. We're never going to win this game. We're going to play a lot of pretty football. We're going to pass it around them, but we're not going to penetrate. And then Chelsea are going to hit us on the break and they're going to win this 2-3-0 and then showed how wrong you can be. So I can't really put it down to anything. I mean, when I saw the goalkeeping situation, particularly, you know how I feel about Fabianski, I won't go on about it, but I couldn't understand why he dropped this young keeper who performed so well against United. It seemed madness, complete madness, to drop this confident young goalkeeper. And I thought, well, maybe it's some sort of mind game that Wenger's playing with young keepers. We've seen him do it in the past when keepers have done quite well. Who's the Austrian guy we had?
Alex Manninger.
Manninger. He had a few good games, and then Wenger dropped him to bring back Seaman. And Seaman was a great keeper, but still, he didn't deserve to come back in the team at that point. But Wenger decided to drop him, and then Manninger was never the same again after. And I was fearful the same was going to happen with Chesney, so I was in this mode of thinking that just no way could we beat Chelsea. But I was completely wrong, and I'm so glad about that. So, honestly, I can't. How can you find a reason for it?
Fear Walcott, the reason. Anyway,
I have to care. Yeah, I was going to say, Kev. I mean, there's an obvious change to the team. I mean, notwithstanding Fabianski coming in to take his place as number one ahead of Chesney. I mean, the other big change, and I remember as you took your seat next to me, you said, "What's the team?" I said, "He's lost the fucking plot. He's dropped Arshavin for Walcott. He's playing. He's dropped Skilacci for Koscielny." The only man whose head is completely identical, if you split it down the middle. Seriously, take a mirror and stick it on either side. He's a peculiar thing. I'm not convinced he's human. But yeah, I mean, Theo Walcott came in, and it wasn't a one-man display, but he was superlative, wasn't he?
He was. And additionally, you've got to also remember that neither Fabregas nor Van Persie started at Old Trafford.
Good point, Kevin.
So I do think the reason for the improved performance was the starting 11, in spite of what Joe thinks. Now, I agree about the keeper, but the keeper's a unique position. But overall, I mean, the players that went out were some of the underperforming ones, and the big players came in. Now, Walcott replaced Arshavin. So basically, what I saw come in was a bit of drive. And a bit of a problem that Chelsea didn't know what to do with, especially as Ashley Cole got a yellow card in the first half. I mean, that was a very game-turning moment. Additionally, you've got Fabregas and Van Persie. Now, Van Persie, he hasn't been scoring, but as was mentioned to me after the game, he really works in terms of position. If you watch his kind of whatever the Guardian chalkboard does on where people pass, he is all over the pitch, basically. He is so mobile, it's untrue. And it's a kind of a bit like Bergkamp used to be. You sometimes don't realise quite how much a player gives to the team simply because they don't score. But
totally
as a linking player, Van Persie's intelligence, and this is the reason he would be world class if he wasn't injured half the time, brings so much to Arsenal. So basically, for my money, Walcott, Van Persie and Fabregas coming in to start made a huge change to the team. And that is the reason we gelled and performed much better than we did at United, which is why also it's critical that if we are going to stand a chance this season, the key players do have to remain fit and start most of the matches.
Can I just say this on Theo, because I'm a big fan of Theo, as you know, but on the day, or on the night, there was a guy standing just a couple of seats away from me, and he was saying, Theo, go back to Southampton, just before he set up Fabregas and scored himself. So the fans were getting very very upset and very much on Theo's case at the time. You know, at the time when he started making the breakthrough against Ashley Cole, so the fans weren't completely on side with Arsene Wenger's selection. Me personally, I wasn't on side for different reasons, but I was happy to see Theo play, and Theo obviously does give Ashley Cole a few headaches.
Never has a player divided opinion, I think, so much as Mr. Walcott. But do you know what, David? I do think, for all these frailties and his fallibilities, if that's a word, what he does offer in drive, in pace, the fact that he wants to have a shot, and the fact that he has got quite a good shot on goal, makes him a player we need to have in the team for the running for the rest of the season. I like the chap. Yes, I agree with you, Kerr, that footballing brain isn't really there, but he runs with it. And he can whip in a decent ball every now and then, but he's got a brilliant shot. He's got to be in the team. And we think we are a different proposition.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he is frustrating as hell to watch, but the one thing he does have is some kind of spell over the opposition. They really don't know what to do with the guy, almost as much as he doesn't know what to do with the ball at times. But even so, he's like an X factor, a whirling dervish, which sometimes reaps dividends, and if you like, a luxury we can afford, assuming we don't start Arshavin. If you play them both, you've got problems. But I think he's the one player where you can say we'll take a gamble with him, and the kid's attitude is spot on. I mean, in terms of commitment, you know, no one's ever faulted Theo for not trying.
He works so hard defensively. I mean, they were showing clips of Arsenal Chelsea when Arshavin played, and I thought, oh, maybe that's why Wenger didn't select him, because there was one game in the past where Arshavin just sort of let the guy cross the ball and that resulted in the goal. So maybe that was part of Wenger's thinking, because he doesn't seem to like to play Arshavin against Chelsea.
I mean, the thing that got me with the Chelsea game from where I was sitting was it's the first time in living memory I've seen 11 or 14 players come off the pitch with absolutely nothing else to give, which is all I ever asked for from an Arsenal team, in fairness. I mean, they all of them covered every single blade of grass. And I think every Arsenal fan can see how good we are with the ball, but I think that's one of the first performances I've seen in living memory when we were well class without it.
I remember our esteemed editor sat right next to me, Kevin, at the start of last season. I think our first game was Everton at Goodison Park. I think we beat them something like 5-1. And Kev said, the reason why we did that, I remember this, Kevin, you spoke to me and you said, it's because, Mark, we pressed. Every single ball, the Arsenal players were chasing it and we were going for it. And in a way, wasn't that like the Chelsea game?
Indeed.
Every time we had the ball, I thought, Kevin, that's what he meant. We were chasing that ball every single time. And it's not really what we see every game, is it?
Well, you only have to remember Arsenal against Barcelona in April to see what effects that can have when a team is up for it and is not going to let the opposition have any chance. And if you could actually put in that kind of performance more often, then there wouldn't be any issues in the crowd about commitment or, you know, desire or earning their money. And when we do play like that, it's a pleasure to watch. The only real issue is, why can't we do that more often? We know we can do it. We know we're capable of doing it. why can't, I mean, I'm not expecting it every game. Physically, it probably isn't possible to do it every game, but you can certainly do it more often.
And on that $64,000 question, I have to wrap things up. To conclude, the usual reminder that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. And Kev, why don't you tell us about the current edition of the Gooner, which went on sale last week against Manchester City.
It is issue 211 of the Gooner. It includes a free occult kits calendar. It will be on sale for the home games against Wigan and Ipswich. And I have to issue a personal apology at this moment to one of our regular contributors, Simon Rose, because during the layout stage, I managed to use a template of a page and didn't put his actual text in for an article called Finders Keepers, which is available now on the website, onlinegooner.com, but sadly didn't go in the issue because of my personal incompetence. So Simon, if you're listening, my most humble apologies to you.
Does explain those and substantiate those rumours that Simon's been seen in a Mayfair hotel with the directors of 1-0 down, 2-1 up. So thanks again to our sponsors.
I say once, I say twice, I say GoonerShirts.com.
And there's just time for our panel to bid farewell. So Mark.
Cheerio.
Kevin.
I hope, listeners, you've enjoyed my attempt at optimism this time around.
And the returning Joe Broadfoot.
Konnichiwa once more.
I'm your host, David Udo, and thank you for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and join the company, hooray!
I thought that should be sayonara.
Sayonara, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought konnichiwa would do. That's why I got kicked out of Japan.
Probably.